You're listening to WGXC 90.7 on your dial or WGXC.org. I'm Tom DiPietro, and this is subbing for Victor Mendolia. This is At Issue, and we're picking up where we last were on May 29th, if you want to go to the archive, talking about the much-discussed LWRP, which stands for the Local Waterfront Revitalization Program. And my guest today is Linda Mussman. Hi, Linda.
Hey, Tom. Glad to be here.
And Linda, what has been your role in the LWRP?
I was the chairman of the LWRP. It was the advisory, the Waterfront Advisory Committee, which picked up the document after it was rejected by the Department of State.
That was in
2005.
I'll
try to remember all these dates, but I must say, you know, it's been a long journey.
I know.
So if I make a mistake, I'll try to get it right at some point.
No, I know. It's a very involved history.
Well, it started in 1988, so you have to go way, way back. And, you know, we're on our 25th year, I think, if my adding is correct. LWRPs are long and complicated documents. Not every city has to have one.
Right. It's a voluntary document.
Voluntary. And
but it makes government money available to the city, or is one of the requirements.
Right. If you want to ask for funds,
it
does assist in the ability to get those funds. And there are certain things that the city could use that the LWRP could, would make the opportunity for state funding available for our community, which it's worth the effort. It also brings the community together in a public discussion about what they see as their waterfront. It's been discussed. It's in the the vision plan. It's mm-hmm. There was a group of people that assembled. I think the Hudson Opera House sponsored that plan in the late 90s to talk about what the vision was for the waterfront. Mm-hmm. That plan has to some degree been followed and is referred to again in the LWRP. So it's a document that has a history that keeps accumulating and building. And this particular plan is...
And by the way, it's available at the City of Hudson website.
Right.
I have my copy printed out right here. It's not too formidable. It's big.
Well, there's a lot of technical honestly, you need a lawyer and a planner to understand.
Right.
Reality is that this is, you need to understand land use. You need to understand the policies and all those documents that are required to fulfill the LWRP for the average citizen. I think it's a daunting task.
It is.
So that, I think you can argue the fine points to some degree, but the citizens' request and what they wanted, it is a common council document.
Mm-hmm.
The council votes on it, has voted on it, has supported it, is moving forward, and then it's at this point we're waiting for the land transfer.
So the current status is that this document will not be submitted again until the land transfer takes place. Is that correct?
Well, as far as I understand, the document is approved until...
Approved by the city council.
The council has approved it. The state will complete it once the fine print is finished. And the fine print is about that land transfer. That is where where the argument is right now, to some degree.
Yeah.
My view of the waterfront is that we have a lot of things that I think are opportunities that are wasted because the document has been fought over, argued about.
Mm-hmm.
The council has voted on it, continues to support it. And I think it is in that sense, you have to understand the political circumstances around a document like this. The people who have supported it,
mm-hmm.
It's like the chicken law last night. It was passed.
Right.
You may not like it. You may not find it a perfect situation, but the council, at least at this point, has supported it.
By a very slim margin, by the way.
In the LWRP has been supported by, in general, has had a large majority of votes to support the document and keep moving it forward. And you have to understand, I think, the political circumstances around a document like this. It is about a waterfront. It is about industry with St. Lawrence Cement, who owns a large part of our waterfront, mm-hmm. and how do we come up with something that we can agree on. And when we agree on things, sometimes there's a compromise, and I think this is a document where everybody has given something to move it forward. I think some people feel that perhaps we need to kick St. Lawrence Wholesome out, mm-hmm. and that is something one could do, but you need the political will to do that.
Right.
And therein lies the rub.
Right. So the compromise you're referring to is how to deal with Wholesome, not St. Lawrence anymore, it's Wholesome now, and how to come up with a workable solution that either allows them to stay in some fashion or kicks them out. And kicking them out, of course, is a much harder procedure.
It's very difficult. It's expensive.
Right.
You can create public, the eminent domain can mm-hmm. be one opportunity, and zoning them out can be another. Both of those ideas cost the city a tremendous amount of money.
Right.
The cooperation of including St. Lawrence Wholesome in this document allows the city to gain a certain amount of acreage, which allows us to expand our waterfront, which allows us to move the boat club out of the heart of our waterfront to the north.
Mm-hmm.
It would give us a new state boat launch, a much more generous open marina. It would offer lots of opportunities to expand our waterfront, which right now we're sort of strangled because we can't move certain things. It has always been in the document to move the Hudson Boat Club, mm-hmm. which is a private club,
right,
in the middle of our public space.
Right.
So those are, I think those things sort of never really get talked about because the focus by a minority voice is focusing on one particular area. And what we really need...
The 7 acres.
Yeah, the seven That's acres, which is key acres, which to expanding our waterfront.
At
and
this point,
that,
we're not even sure what the actual acreage is, but
well, really
it doesn't matter.
I don't think that really matters.
It doesn't really
what
matter.
Really matters is that we need to have that property to expand
right.
the waterfront. I mean, and the trucks are certainly an issue. The reality is, do we want the trucks on the waterfront? I don't really want them on the waterfront. But the fact is that the St. Lawrence Wholesome property owns that causeway. It's part of the deal. There was other opportunities. We could have said no to that. And I think if you say no to that, then you say no to everything. And in reality, the way the zoning and the way the document is constructed, it puts a very narrow, it constrains them to such a degree that we control what goes on at the waterfront.
Right. And according to that current rezoning, right, because it just passed, 2 years ago?
Right.
It prevents the aggregate. For those who don't know, it's about bringing aggregate to the waterfront by truck. The alternative, the zoning makes it difficult, or actually illegal, I guess would be the word, for them to bring the trucks through town and drive them across the bridge into the, across the front street into the port. The alternative has been to allow them to revive the road or conveyor belt that goes through the South Bay. Is that correct?
Well, there's no conveyor system
right
in there.
But it could be. It's zoned that it would be allowed.
You got me there. Not that I know of.
The other thing would be the causeway? Allowing the causeway?
The causeway is where the truck traffic
wants to draw. So it's be truck traffic. Truck traffic.
Want to drive on the causeway. And that would take the truck traffic out of the city of Hudson.
But it would put it in.
At least a portion of
right.
it. Unless Greenport, and this is another part of this complex story.
Right.
Unless Greenport allows them to create a roadway through that property, which would allow those trucks to go through the St. Lawrence Wholesome property, drive across 9G onto the causeway, which would totally remove the truck traffic from the city
right.
of Hudson. And that, I went to one of those sessions in Greenport where it was brought up, and this was sort of in the heart and the heat of where this document was at the time. And they never really moved that forward.
Mm-hmm.
Whether Wholesome or ONG feels that, it's too expensive or to develop that roadway, I don't know where that stands. But that would take all of the trucks out of the city of Hudson. I mean, in my view, having the trucks travel past the windows right here in the studio,
mm-hmm.
on down Columbia Street.
Past TSL, which
past
is
TSL,
your,
which is MySpace, on down to Front Street is incredibly hard on the city mm-hmm. of Hudson. And I think the sooner we can get these trucks off of our streets, the better. In addition to that, it's not just the aggregate trucks
right.
that are hard on our city. It's
mm-hmm.
all of the trucks, which is another long discussion.
I, too, live on a truck route, so I...
Yeah, you're on the upper end
right.
of it. And I think, you know, the fact is that this is a big question for the city of Hudson.
And Alderman, if you're listening, when a recent, I don't know if it's a sewer cap or one of the roadway caps was put in, it was set too deep. So every time a truck hits that, I know you probably know this phenomenon from Columbia Street. Every time a truck hits it, it sounds like a crash happening. I mean, it's just part of that whole experience is more than just the average noise, which I was prepared for. But now there's this unusual noise every time it hits a pothole. Anyway.
Well, the fact is, in front of TSL, the sewer system has been dug up numerous
right,
times.
Same.
There was one not long ago, the whole street was closed
mm-hmm.
to dig the entire street up because the collapse of the sewer walls were so severe. And that is a direct relationship that comes from the trucks.
Mm-hmm.
The TSL building, which is made out of cement, shakes when some of the truck traffic goes past. Right now, the summer, when kids are out of school, you have an extreme amount of aggregate shipping right now. I mean,
mm-hmm.
the road building happens in the summer,
yeah, right.
so you have a lot of truck traffic. I mean, to stall this document further continues the hardship on the city of Hudson. ONG, Wholesome need to get this agreement settled and move so we can move forward, and that would make... I think takes some of the pressure off of our community, and particularly a community who can't move off of the truck route,
right.
who walk to the stores, walk to daycare centers, walk to services, are facing these huge, huge trucks which are filled with aggregate, dust, dirt, noise, pollution, and on and on. And
mm-hmm.
this is, you know, it's a long road. We've been under this pressure for a long time, and I think... the causeway isn't the best solution, but it is a solution that
mm-hmm.
relieves some of the pressure from our community and the people who are at the biggest risk, who live on it, buy it, near it, walk. I think the causeway for the interim solution is the best we can do at this time. And that is the... You know,
that's the compromise.
That's the
about.
Compromise, and I will hark back to things like Obamacare. Is it the best health care we could have had?
Mm-hmm.
I would have liked to seen a better system. I'd like to see a lot of things different, but the fact is, you have to have the political will. You have to have the political votes to move
right.
these documents
say,
forward.
The will means,
you know, and
yeah, right.
I haven't seen mass groups of people rush into City Hall demanding certain things from the waterfront. I think that it's a large area that it covers. It's almost 1,000 acres. It's a lot of people live in the waterfront, and they have a lot at stake. And I think they're in general work through their aldermen or. Maybe the fact is that they're struggling just to pay the rent,
mm-hmm.
and they aren't obsessed with what goes on at the waterfront. Many people enjoy the waterfront. I mean, in the 90s, the best oil tanks came down, those large tanks that sat
mm-hmm.
there. You couldn't even get near the place.
Mm-hmm.
Those came down. The CSX property was acquired. The Lockwood property was acquired. I mean, in my lifetime of Hudson, which
right.
is a couple decades, a
right.
lot has changed at the
yeah.
waterfront. And
no, I realize that from reading the document.
It is. It's an amazing, Hudson is an amazing place. It's a great opportunity to have fun and engage people. It is our economic energy. I mean, there are certain things that I think are incorrect at the waterfront. I think having the spirit of Hudson dominate the
mm-hmm.
the dock there is
right.
not correct. It's not enough money. It's a very small amount of rent that he pays. I think Washington Hose and the Chamber of Commerce should be much more active.
Is that a long-term deal, the Spirit of Hudson?
It's been there for many, many years, and I think they – I mean, I'm not sure why the council doesn't really question or challenge this rental agreement.
Is that controlled by the Harbor Master or by
– Well, at this point, there is no Harbor Master until this document is completed. The Chamber of Commerce took over the Washington Hose. The point of that Washington Hose, if you read the document, was to attract more people down to to the waterfront. It should be, in my mind, I'm just Linda Mussman, citizen.
Right, you have no official status at this point.
I'm just a free spirit here.
But you are a significant landowner here.
I am a significant landowner, and I have invested heavily in the city. Mm-hmm. TSL was certainly one of the pioneers that brought a lot of energy and enthusiasm to the art scene. I was also part of the Stopping St. Lawrence Cement. Mm-hmm. It was a long 6-year struggle, which occupied a lot of time, energy, resources. And
for anyone who's unfamiliar with the struggle, there's the movie 2 Mile, I think it's called.
Two
Square Miles. It's if you plan on staying in Hudson, people talk about required reading. This is required viewing to understand the history of the struggle that helped form present-day Hudson, really.
It was a major, major change in bringing people together and fighting and for something we all believed totally in, that we wanted to have a space that was free of such an overwhelming industrial giant, which would have shadowed all of our efforts and would have been transformative, to be sure. I think the waterfront is key to economic energy. It's key to how Hudson can become more important, not only to Hudson and the people who live here, but to the entire county and the interest of who wants to be in this community and how to use our waterfront and how to get access to our waterfront.
Do you think we're stuck, so to speak, with that element of industry that's presently there? Currently there?
I think for the interim it is in the document that the city of Hudson would like to have the port in the future. And I think we will have the port. And I think it is the opportunity that will complete the vision of how to restore Hudson to its former glory of a whaling port that the people from Nantucket moved here and tried to have a new energy, which they brought us this incredible city, and that was how you entered the city. And I think it's an opportunity to enter the city from the port and see the city from, we're having the building shaking.
We're getting a hands-on experience of what it is to be on a truck route right now, I believe.
Yeah, maybe the train's coming.
No, I think that was just trucks
just
going
trucks.
By. Yeah.
Boom, boom. Changed my, made my thinking.
No, I know. One of the issues addressed in the document is, of course, how people come into Hudson. And in the future, of course, we would like more people to come by the river. And that's part of the marina proposal in the document. By the way, I recommend to everyone who is unfamiliar, the document has many difficult sections, but there's a good overview of the city of Hudson. And if you want to, if you a concerned citizen, I recommend going online and reading. You don't have to read the whole thing. Because as Linda said, may I call you Linda?
Sure.
As Linda said, some of it is just things that are there because when the first document or one of the earlier documents was sent to the government, they didn't really follow the guidelines quite well. So they had to come back with a very different outline. They even had to reformat the whole thing.
The rejection and by the state in 2005 was because the public had no input into that document.
But I remember at one point, one of the versions, they hadn't even formatted it correctly. So it was,
true.
Anyway, that's history that's not even important. But the history provided of the city is, it's a thumbnail sketch, but it's pretty good. And there's a lot of documentation in it as well.
We were responsible for hiring a planner, and that was key to...
This is BFJ planning.
BFJ was the planner that was hired. Everyone voted for BFJ to be the person, the agency that would do the planning.
And they're the ones who sort of had to follow the guidelines.
Well, that and the lawyer who worked on the document
to come up with new zoning
to
laws and
come up with the zoning issues and the plan and take the public's input and make that all a comprehensive document. BFJ had worked on other LWRPs. They had experience. The BFJ was a requirement of this document, and the state approved their hiring.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't, I mean, the Department of State has been a partner in this whole process, and I think there are sometimes the sort of suggestion that these things are done and
I was going to get to that.
Closed hidden away, and these are documents that have had a tremendous amount of scrutiny. Everything in this document has been gone over in public comments and endless discussions.
When the DOS, Department of State, contacts BFJ and whoever, and Cheryl Roberts, the city attorney, obviously some of that has to be done person to person. I mean, they don't always put it into print or have an open meeting about every communication.
Oh,
right?
But the LWRP documents were scrutinized. You know, all these documents were gone over.
Right.
Discussed,
I guess,
conversations.
The latest contention is that, to get back to the very present, the latest contention is that the wholesome agreement, whatever you want to call it, agreement,
right,
deal, transference, was negotiated sub rosa. You know, that it was a backroom deal or whatever it is, and that it was in response to the DOS, to the Department of State, telling us that we had to do that before we could submit the LWRP.
Well, that's part of the document, is the acquiring that land.
Right.
So that land needs to be acquired.
It's part of the document, but that.
I know.
The question is, did the state say they required that, or did we decide?
What's in the LWRP?
Yeah, right.
That's all the desire of the LWRP, and that is
right.
A key. I mean, it's a key to this document,
mm-hmm,
is dealing with
property.
That property and coming up with an agreement, fulfilling the agreement that we said we were going to do. So that is, I mean, without that linkage to the waterfront expansion, the document isn't complete.
Right.
The wholesome commitment needs to be taken care of. And otherwise, you've spent a lot of time, energy, and money, and
mm-hmm,
dialogue, and strain, and stress without getting that finished.
Right.
I mean, we want to get the trucks off the streets.
Right.
We need to do. We want to get somewhere that shows some opportunity that we're moving this waterfront forward, and part of that is the deal, getting this deal finished with Wholesome. Whether that, you know, you can argue about the deal forever, but
mm-hmm,
the deal has been this, you know, this acreage has been a part of this document. Whether you like how it's constructed, I guess you can argue about that. But
mm-hmm,
the fact is, the deal with Wholesome, I mean, so, well, is it too long? Is it, you know, when do we get this? When do we get that? You know, in reality, these are things that you have to trust the people you elect to carry forward, or we will sit in the Common Council for endless hours and
mm-hmm,
debate whether we like X, Y, and Z. I mean, do I like the police contract? I don't particularly like it. Was I in the room? Were we in there? No, we weren't. We elect the mayor. We elect.
Right.
We pick lawyers to take on cases to defend the city, and you have to, having worked with some of these things, you have to live with them. Do
right.
you like all of those things? No. You know, I mean, I hire a lawyer when I close on a piece of property. I trust that the lawyer serves me well. The city functions in many ways to assist the people that it represents to take care of certain things, and I think this deal, moving this forward, is key to getting the waterfront moving.
Right. excuse me, in the first episode, we'll call it, of this discussion, I had to remind my guests that we are the city. I mean, they, as much as I, you know, was trying to be impartial, they did seem to suggest that somehow we lived in some kind of autocratic or even totalitarian city here. And it's just not the case. We can vote. We can determine who is making these decisions. And that's how a democracy works. I mean, excuse me for editorializing there, guys, but you know I didn't agree with you on that point. And, you know, if it's really that important to you, it does mean changing who's in office. I mean, you're right, Linda. I mean,
I've run for mayor several times. And the reason I ran for mayor in 2001 was because there was no one that was running at that time that spoke out against St. Lawrence Cement.
Mm-hmm.
It gave me the opportunity to, it gave me and the city and the voters an opportunity to hear another point of view. And it was a political action that I took because I believed and still do believe that it was the right thing to do. To change the political structure, you have to work at it. You have to go door to door. You have to promote your ideas. You have to offer an alternative idea. I think a lot of people have a lot of trouble working on that idea.
Oh, I agree with you totally. And I've noticed, as a relative newcomer, I'm always amazed how many of the newcomers think that their presence suddenly alters the landscape. It's just not that simple. And it shows no respect for the people who have been here a long time, who grew up here, you know, who can feel disenfranchised also from the whole new process going on here.
Exactly. I mean, the dialogue becomes very polarized and skewed because the, you know, just because someone moves here doesn't mean that everything changes. I mean, I've been here a long time, and I'm still considered an outsider.
Right.
I've invested, I've given, I've done a lot of things for the community, but that doesn't mean, you know, that one is accepted automatically.
Right.
I've at the time I ran in 2001, it gave me an opportunity to go door to door, and it was an opportunity to speak directly to people and meet me and talk face to face. And that is where the political change happens. If you really want change and you really believe in things, being in the Common Council as a critic doesn't make it. You have to take a risk and ask your neighbors, ask people you don't know to listen to what you have to say about things that you really believe in. And those are, I mean, this is a big city and many different opinions and many different points of view. You know, you have the boulevards, which is it's a newer part of Hudson. It's people who lived in Hudson who moved there. You have the historic element of Hudson. You have the art scene in Hudson. You have the people who want to open a business here, open a restaurant, who want to, you know, open different kinds of things, record stores. There's young people, middle.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of people. I mean,
it's a hard group to keep.
It's a bunch of cats trying to herd them.
Right. And even though it's a big city, it's also very small, so that you can get out there. And I mean, there's 7,000 potential voters.
Yeah, I've walked the city over and over.
It's not hard to actually contact every voter.
People open the door. They're nice to you. They talk to you. They're interested. They may not want to vote for you, but they're interested in listening. Mm-hmm. And they are curious, and they want to know who you are and what your points of view are. And I think people, you know, when I ran for many of the young women in this community, they saw me as a woman running for mayor, and they never, you know, this idea of actually running for office as a woman was a pretty fresh idea as for the city of Hudson. I mean, there hasn't, you know, there haven't been people who wanted that office too often. Gave them some hope, some opportunity to think about a way of having the door open for you. So it was, winning isn't always the only thing that happens during elections. I mean, there's
It's building.
It's building coalitions. And, listen, this is a long road to change. And the city of Hudson is a model city in many ways. It has just about everything here. Every issue, every problem, every possible thing you can think of is pretty much.
So that's little civics lesson aside. Let's get back to this one or two final issues about the LWRP. Once again, we're talking here with Linda Mussman about the local waterfront revitalization program, a document she had a hand in. As you were chair of that committee or just on that committee?
I was the chair.
Chair. And there was a five-person committee, or?
I think it was five.
Five, yeah.
The council president was on it. There were some citizens on it.
And included in the document, by the way, are the notes on the public hearings done in 2006 and 2007, mm-hmm. I believe.
Yes.
So
it all got included.
It all got included. The criticism, of course, has been that some of the post-document arrangements were not quite as public. You know, as I do understand that every single exchange involved with a document can't be a public discussion. If the Department of State calls up somebody on Cheryl Roberts, perhaps, and says, you know, you should be thinking about this aspect, she doesn't have to then, I mean, it'd be a belabored process for her then to communicate that to the entire city in some fashion and ask for commentary. Right?
I mean, that's a reality of
right.
anything that goes on in the city or
so,
in the document.
Once again, the issue that seems to be the bone of contention at this point has to do with property in the lower part of the waterfront, also called the South Bay. There are about 4 acres there owned by Holcim. Is it 4 acres, the Holcim? Is Holcim, by the way, is that property going to be sold shortly? Do you know?
You know, rumors.
There's rumors. Okay.
Abound.
Rumors abound. Okay.
You know, I've been at meetings for a long time where people wanted to acquire the mm-hmm. this Holcim property. I mean, this has been going on, whether it's for sale or not, I don't know. I mean, but endless rumors. You know?
Now, one of the consequences of getting the final approval for the document means that the city then gets oversight of the waterfront, which in a way they don't really have right now. Ultimately, anything that's done has to go. Whoa, there's our favorite. Comes a train. Anything that's done has to go. You know, in terms of whoa.
All right.
Has an environmental impact or whatever. Still has to deal with this. We'll take a little pause there. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 or WGXC.org streaming on your computer. So, in other words, the fear, and again, this is a basic civics issue. I mean, the fear is that once the city gets control, that they will lose control, so to speak. And I guess that's just a matter of trust, right?
No, this is, again, who's elected, who's in charge.
Right.
I think that's the strength of the LWRP in having it pass and be accepted as a document. In 2006, when I was the chair of the Waterfront Advisory Committee, one of the first things we did was we created a moratorium so we could guarantee that nothing would happen. No expansion, mm-hmm. no messing it up while we worked on the LWRP.
Right.
That was a very important step, and I think that was clearly an effort to hold off anything that Holcim, or it was St. Lawrence at that time, that they might do to harm the opportunity for us to change the zoning, which was part of the Randy Daniels ruling, which is so crucial in stopping St. Lawrence Cement,
mm-hmm.
and his recommendation was to change the zoning. The zoning has been changed. It is no longer this massive industrial place. So I think the steps that have been made, in my mind, are convincing to show that the city is in goodwill, good faith, moving toward what the majority of the citizens would like to see their waterfront be.
How did that rezoning affect the property in question, the 7 to 10 acres?
Well, there's
south.
A core. I mean, there's some that southern property is mm. where some of the Hudson Marina is potentially going to go, which is why it is so crucial.
Right.
And I'm not talking about this. The argument about who owns what was
right.
there, on and on and on, the
right.
endless discussion
right.
about all of that. What is important is that expansion of our waterfront and the sort of clearing that so that the public can actually enjoy the waterfront that exists without having the boat club in the very center of it.
Right.
You have to have that acreage
in
to
case you
get
In access. Case you don't know, the boat club is a private enterprise, and I know my own wife, her first experience of the waterfront was driving down to the waterfront and hitting the boat club where it says keep out.
That's
Couldn't
right.
even park there. And that's not a good thing.
That's not a great idea.
Yeah.
And I, nothing, you know, so the
no,
boat
it's not against the boat club.
They've done,
right.
You know, whatever, they have a right to be there, but
right.
the opportunity for them to move has always been in the document, and they've always agreed to
Oh, they have. I was just going to ask you.
Yeah, it isn't a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
They once, when I inherited the document, there was a potential that maybe the state boat launch, you know, we could move it to the CSX property, but there wasn't enough space. And that was part of a study that was made and approved to be impossible. So the only option is this, is that leg of property which St. Lawrence owns, which expands the marina. Now, these are all long, long discussions.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe that, you know, hopefully that is a possibility. You have to have a study to, you know, have it done once the LWRP...
Anybody who's gone down to look at it, she knows that there's an access problem. To that
well, you, the trucks are driving past
right.
there. I mean,
right.
there's if you read the document,
mm-hmm.
there's potential that the potential is there that it could be shared. I mean, you can argue. Well, you can argue about that. You can argue.
Right.
Well, that can't be. It's too small. You can't this and that. The planner felt in his document, which everybody voted on, that the possibility was there. This has to go through. You know, a study has to be done. Mm-hmm. You have to put forward a. You know, just like we did with the CSX property, when we studied it, it was
found
not...
You couldn't do it there.
It was found out impossible to place all that traffic there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, having all those cars and all the parking and the... I mean, it seems like the waterfront should be enjoyed without a bunch of cars
mm-hmm.
right in front of it. I mean, that certainly would help relieve some of how we enter our waterfront
mm-hmm.
and how we see it and view it and enjoy it. So I think
and those who come to the city from the waterfront, perhaps a better access to the to the city itself rather than just a bunch of parking lots after they've come on
right,
shore.
Right, and there's an opportunity. There's opportunities that are available down there. I mean, you have...
You know, one of the classic problems that Beacon had when they put in Beacon was that people took the train, came to the museum, but never made the step up to the city or the town, whichever it is. And if you have your waterfront and then a blockade of parking lots, that'll have the same kind of effect, perhaps.
Well, I think you have to look at all of the things that have gone on in New York City and all the development
mm-hmm.
of the waterfront. I mean, it's an amazing, I mean, talk about a crowded place.
I know.
I mean, there's
I remember as a child going down the West Side when there were still
yeah.
all the old decrepit piers and
yeah.
actually, even when there were still ocean liners coming in and everything, it was a completely different experience.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a pretty congested community. So I think, you know, Hudson can certainly
right.
figure, you know, we can figure this out.
Mm-hmm.
We can manage coexistence in a lot of different, with a lot of different things happening at the waterfront.
Do we, if we get control, we being the city, of those, that land, are we still subject to various environmental and other concerns? I mean, what's the nature of the autonomy that we receive when we get the LWRP approved?
Well, there's all this, the environmental questions, it's the same thing like when we were talking about the Dunn warehouse last
mm-hmm.
night. It was
right.
cleaned up to a certain point. The liabilities relate to the previous owners,
mm-hmm.
and those are, and again, I would, you'd have to ask the lawyer Cheryl Roberts about the details of all the environmental steps
oh, yeah, that,
and causes.
That,
I mean, these are really
no. I agree with you about that. I mean, that to me was a moot point. That whole issue of
yeah.
Standard Oil because it doesn't. I mean, there's liability no matter who.
Right. So in the same
and
thing,
Standard
with
Oil
Foster's,
still exists in the form of ExxonMobil, and there is Superfund. I mean,
so,
there are things to clean
up. I mean,
up
I don't. I, most of the waterfront spaces are pretty dirty.
Right.
Historically, because of all the industry that's been around them. I mean, we had Foster's, which we're still struggling to clean up. So, I mean, there have been brownfield grants. There's different things to research, study, figure it out, look forward to cleaning it up. The goal is to get the property and move the LWRP forward. And I think those environmental issues around all that, I mean, I can't believe... There aren't issues that Cheryl Roberts has thought through
mm-hmm.
with this document and wouldn't put the city in jeopardy with.
Right. I wouldn't.
I mean, I think that becomes another side argument about, oh, well, it's too dirty. We don't want it.
Right.
Or, oh, well, we want it even though it's dirty. I mean, I think it depends on what day it is and the point you're trying to make in that argument.
Right.
Most of the waterfronts along, I mean, I've taken the train to Chicago, right? Mm-hmm. Every waterfront I've been past is abandoned industry.
Right.
And most of the time those industries were built way before some of the environmental restrictions mm-hmm. that we live under now. So I think the reality of cleaning up our waterfront is part of what the city and the people who think about waterfront and how we want to mm-hmm. use it is part of what we have to examine and make sure we're protected. And I believe that the lawyer around these issues has that experience and is capable of making, you know, helping us make those decisions.
I guess my question was, though, what's the difference if the city has control of that versus the state? I mean, part of when this document gets approved means, you know, they set up that review. I forget what it's called. There'll be another 3 or 5 person committee that, you know, oversees the waterfront mm-hmm. or oversees the diamond. They can't subvert state laws about development.
Well, I really don't. I mean, I guess anybody can do anything. But I don't think people are interested in subverting.
I think you understand what I'm trying to address here.
If the document passes, you have this core group of people who review it.
Right.
You're still restricted by what the LWRP says. I mean, the LWRP is the document we're to live by.
I see.
So we can't just sort of willy-nilly sort of, oh, well, we're going to bring St. Lawrence Wholesome back.
Right.
We're going to build a cement plant. And I don't think that's going to happen because the document restricts this, you know, it sets out a certain amount of guidelines. The state's involved. There's a lot of people involved in oversight and coastal agreements that we have to step up and meet.
Right.
And those are the things that we have to live by. I guess those three people, one would have to trust that the political body that put those three people there are hopefully the ones that will support that document. I mean, there are planning boards here, there's zoning boards here, there's all kinds of boards that function on behalf of the community. And I think this is, again, another group that would make sure that the outline and the goals of the LWRP were met.
Mm-hmm.
But this is Hudson. I think people feel there's a conspiracy, there's issues, you know, and there are days like, I wish it were this or that. But mm-hmm. the fact is the people who are elected to do those things are the ones that we have to put, we have to either apply pressure, we have to figure out ways to make sure that our points of view are either heard. Maybe we don't get our way all the time. I mean, I've been complaining about the truck route.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still complaining about it. We'll continue to complain about it. It is a big complaint because it takes on many, many things. It's not just a local issue. It's about commerce and the right for people to pass through our city that is a national issue. And
right.
It goes past my little, mm-hmm. citizenry. Doesn't mean that I can't voice my unhappiness. And I think the positive ideas have to sort of emerge in this community. I think some people don't want to even say anything because the environment is so toxic around some of these issues. And I think the waterfront has become that issue. It has become that issue, and it continues to be that issue. And I think that puts people in a place like, well, I don't really know what's going on with that waterfront, but I don't want to even go near it.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the people who live in the waterfront area really have no idea the impact of it. Bliss Towers is in the waterfront. All the housing on the front street is in the waterfront. And many people who have a great view of the waterfront and use it and fish there, I think don't even have an idea about, well, what's the LWRP or what's... because it has not filtered into the large citizenry after the document after we did all the discussions and we made all the effort to outreach, there was just some people are not going to come out and get obsessed with the waterfront. As hard as you may try, mm-hmm. you know, but it does, I would say, as the waterfront has developed and as people have become to enjoy it and go to a concert there or a chili event that, you know, eat the chili, have mm-hmm. a taste, the whole community starts to see how important the waterfront is because of the steps we've taken to bring more and more attention and more people to come and enjoy our waterfront. I think enjoyment of something that we've been kept away from is very hard to say, you know, to convince people that this opportunity exists until you have something for them to hook into and relate to. I mean, true. I live in Hudson, New York. I have to make a big effort to get to the river.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not it's a convenience for me. You know, and how does it become more convenient by the more development we have to get pedestrians there, to make it accessible for little boats and
all of which is addressed
boats,
in the document.
Which is all addressed in that document.
So certainly you don't suggest that people should not be concerned with the document. I mean, it seems to me the strength of the document is that if people do look at it, they might not want to read it, every sentence in it, but that the document does show that most of these long-term questions are addressed, very clearly. And there were numerous surprises to me in the document about anticipating problems as well as things that we want to see in the city, like you just said, how to get to the waterfront if you live in town, in the city, or, you know, east of the waterfront. It's not easy. I mean, you walk there, but between there's a certain point where you hit Front Street and it's like, how do I get there?
How do I get there?
If I go to Promenade, I'm cut off. I can't. You know, you might someone new walking down to the river, walk straight past the Chamber of Commerce, go up to the Promenade and say, whoa, I'm stuck here. I can't get down to the river.
Right, and that is one of the goals, is to connect Promenade with the waterfront. And that's another great plan and an idea that could make a huge difference. I mean, there are certain holes in this landscape of the city, and the streetscapes, which create confusion. There's mm-hmm. that Front Street was once all access.
All gridded,
to the water,
just like the rest of the city.
You know, all gridded. It went right down there. How to restore that, how to make that. There has to be, you know, you have to continue to work hard to make that happen, which is why I think Washington Hose needs to really be open in the evening, particularly in the evening, on the weekends, and attract more and more.
I know, we've just gotten them to have some opening on the weekend, which that they weren't was kind of, I mean, if it is, it is also a tourist information center, correct?
Yeah, the Chamber of Commerce. I mean, maybe how about a couple chairs, tables, and a cup of coffee? I mean, the reality is, I mean, it's one of the busiest train stations in the Northeast Corridor, for example. What people get in, they come in, they get in their car, and they drive out of Hudson. You know, how do you keep the focus on the waterfront? How do you keep the focus on people staying and looking and enjoying our community? That's key. And also getting the citizens to be more involved and getting interested in what goes on at the waterfront. I mean, that is a big, big hurdle to jump over. People are not going to read, I mean, how many pages is that document?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, whether they're going to get into the waterfront is they're going to go down there and enjoy it. And that's
the only reason I advocate looking at the document is to see that there aren't any real secrets in it. I mean,
I'm all for it. I think you should read it. I've read it numerous times. It is very inclusive. It's very it talks a lot about a lot of things that mm-hmm. people would be surprised, and the history of the community and how it's developed is all very important.
Do you think it's possible that if the city and when the city acquires the acreage south of Holcim, that nothing will happen there? That'll just be left the way it is?
I hope not. I think it's a very important link to our waterfront. I mean, I think I've been down there. I've walked on mm-hmm. that property. It's an amazing view. It's an amazing opportunity to create more marinas and more opportunities for boats to dock. I mean, there's great space down there. to bring people to our community by the water and have more opportunities to use the water as a transportation outlet for, you know, our to move, to go different places. Maybe there's opportunities to, you know, have the ferry services back or more speedy boats that move people around rather than using cars all the time. And
just a small point. At a meeting, not this month, but last month, the Common Council president displayed a map of the old cement plant proposal and suggested that, you know, as long as that land is in wholesome hands, there's always that possibility. That's not really true, is it?
You know, I guess anything is possible. There is a vast amount of, you know, limestone potential cement-making product. If we look over there to the mountain, it's right there. In our lifetime, in the next 50 years, 100 years, I don't know. I mean, you have to look at how the global market treats the cement business. I mean, we are in a valley rich with the product. So could it happen? I guess it could. But the reality of happening in Hudson, I think, is very small. And the reason is Hudson is developing rapidly, and the rapidness and the importance of that waterfront will just increase. And I think it's more valuable as a community asset than it is as a cement opportunity for
Absolutely.
A cement plant to come and go from. And I think it's just,
and Don,
you know,
Don, if you're listening, that wasn't meant to be a criticism. In fact, I hope you'll be in on this discussion if we continue it in another episode, or we could talk about other things. So that's a standing invitation to you, Don, to be on At Issue while Victor is on hiatus as he runs for mayor. Well,
how are we doing?
I think we're doing good.
I've worked a long time to be in this community and support the idea of a clean, healthy, friendly, accessible community. And I think the argument about St. Lawrence, the 6-year fight, was daunting and exhausting. I think the support of this document to move it forward, to move away from this industrial space is a huge accomplishment. And I think the city is moving in a direction which is extremely positive. And I think the opportunities abound for the city of Hudson and that port, and for the citizens to someday own it and control it. It's in the works, and I think we need to move forward and get, and hope ONG is listening and Wholesome. Mm-hmm. We need the document signed, sealed, and delivered so we can make some more choices and plans so our waterfront can be even more grand and have the opportunities that Hudson deserves.
And that's sort of the dilemma right now. We're not even sure where that negotiation is, right? I mean,
you know, look, it's a huge, huge organization.
Right.
I am assured, I'm imagining that this is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know when, and I don't know. It could be tomorrow. I think the Wholesome conglomerate, whatever, how to reach, you know, how to get everybody on board and get the thing signed. I mean, it's not easy. It's not I'm sure it's complicated.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm not privileged to any of these conversations. I'm not in the room.
Good to get that on record.
I'm not in the room. I've never, I've never cut a deal. I've never done anything. I don't, St. Lawrence Cement, haven't had a dialogue, Wholesome. I don't know where they are or what they're doing. If they're listening, I hope they move it along. I think
Did you have any role in the initial negotiations with Wholesome?
Never.
No.
I mean, there was nothing to negotiate.
Right.
All we did was talk to everybody who was a player on this, you know, including all the businesses, everybody involved, some of which are not anymore. L&B, for example.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There's a lot of people that were there that are not there at this time. I have never, you know, there was never any discussion privately with anyone around anything. It was all done in public with the planners. We all met. We met with the owner of Basilica. We met with Stageworks. We met with St. Lawrence Cement. We met with all the people who had a stake in the waterfront to find out their plans. And at that time, we discovered that ONG was a player and was now the person that we were dealing with in addition to St. Lawrence. Mm-hmm. Then St. Lawrence was merged into Wholesome, and now we're dealing with Wholesome. So, this is a long time ago.
Yeah. Well, Linda, I want to thank you a lot. I know you were a critic of the first episode of this discussion, and I appreciated your criticism at the time because, you know, it's rough to come in on this and try to figure out what's going on. But the reason I'm doing it partly is because I know from talking to people around town that a lot of people would like some guidance in all this, you know,
Well, I'm up for the conversation. I think it needs to be
and
a
I appreciate,
little more balanced.
Right, and I appreciate that you kept out personalities. I mean, I think my first guest misunderstood when I said not to name names. I didn't really mean you couldn't name names. I just meant keep out the personality aspects of it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm not interested in all that. I'm interested in seeing Hudson flourish
right.
and grow, and
right.
I think anything I've done here has suggested that idea.
And so, by the way, anybody who wanted to call in, I'm sorry we didn't take any calls. We had too much to talk about, and I hope when it's posted online, I'll post it at Facebook. If you have something you want to say, say it there, and I'll address it in the next episode. Linda Mussman from TSL has been our guest today, talking about the Local Waterfront Revitalization Program, commonly known locally as LWRP, of which she was one of the architects, and I don't mean that literally because she's not an architect, but Linda, once again, thank you very
thank
much
you,
for
Tom.
Coming in, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you for the chance.
Okay, you've been listening to WGXC 90.7, WGXC.org on your computer or streaming in, and I'm Tom DiPietro, and I'm here substituting for Victor Mendolia, who is on hiatus for the very simple reason that he is now a candidate for mayor. So, in a reversal of roles, I hope to have Victor in and hear why he thinks he should be the next mayor of Hudson. He's not the first person to think that of themselves, of him or herself. And there are so many issues involved that he can address. I think he was a supporter of the chickens last night. And for a bit of comedy, maybe we'll have, before the mayor signs the chicken law, maybe we'll have a discussion about chickens. Okay. Thank you for listening. And coming up is, let's see, who's next? Tyler, I believe. But here we go. Thanks for listening.